The following podcast is a proud member of the Blue Collar Roots Network. Find all the shows by visiting bluecollarroots.com.
Going to Greensboro would be good, but I wouldn't do that for $200. $200.
Welcome to the Service Business Mastery Podcast. I'm your host, Tersh Blissett. This podcast is part of the Blue Collar Roots Network of podcasts. The producer and editor of this podcast is Brian Orr. Service Business Mastery focuses on helping and guiding service-based business owners, managers, and service technicians who may be considering becoming new business owners themselves. Our goal on this podcast is to help guide you away from making some major mistakes that were made by others who have started their businesses. On today's episode, we will hear from Stephen Reardon. Many of you know Stephen from his YouTube page. The page has well over 3 million views. He also has a large following on Facebook, primarily within the HVAC industry. Stephen recently decided to take the plunge into business ownership, and today we will discuss some of the challenges he has faced so far. We'll also talk a little bit about the success he's had on YouTube and what others can do to help grow their following. A little side note, you may hear a few birds chirping in the background. It was a real nice morning, bright and early, so Stephen decided to record outside. The birds were singing throughout the majority of the interview, but I think Brian's done a pretty good job of editing most of it out. But anyways, without any further ado, let's get down to the nitty-gritty with Stephen.
I don't have a whole lot on the agenda for today, but I do want to ask you just a few questions and get your insights on a few things.
Absolutely. I'd actually be interested in getting some questions asked of you as a new business owner. It's insane how much information people offer. And then when you ask for information, it's all over the board. I don't know if you noticed the thread about the Greensboro contractor last night on my Facebook group. But I asked if there was someone near Greensboro, North Carolina that could do blower door and ductwork repair.
I glanced at it for a second, but there were only like one or two comments at the time that I read it.
It didn't really go viral by any stretch of the imagination, but I got a couple of guys that were pretty pointed in saying that I should be driving 2 hours to serve a customer.
I did see that.
And I thought, why would I drive 2 hours? Yes, as a new business owner, I need work. I need to generate work, but driving 2 hours to do a blower door and some duct repair is not in the customer's best interest. I mean, if that's the case, I might as well drive to San Francisco or fly to Sweden.
Okay, so there's two extremes on that end of the spectrum that I feel pretty strongly about. Set up your end game in the beginning. So if you plan on crossing the entire nation or crossing the entire world from the get-go, then do that in the beginning. If you plan on only staying in your, call it a 60-mile service area, then don't go outside the 60-mile service area unless it's for a family member or something like that. Once you do it once, it's real easy for somebody to say, oh, well, you did it this time, especially for you because you're kind of a public figure and a lot of your stuff's on YouTube. So people will say, oh yeah, well, I seen that you went to so-and-so city in Alabama, and why won't you come to Columbia, South Carolina? Because that's a lot closer than Alabama.
And the funny thing is, I would love to, and I would go to Greensboro this afternoon if I felt like the customer was actually going to pay for that level of cross-country service.
There are some people, you know, several of the guys too, we all follow them, that they go across the country and do building type performance. And once you get up there in the industry, I feel like to get your niche customers, you're going to wind up having to go a little bit outside of there. Unless your business model that you plan on making, you're going to be hard pressed. You're going to set yourself to stay there in town, which is not a bad idea. Right next to us is Hilton Head Island. You could come down here, or somebody could build a building performance business on Hilton Head and stay there their entire career and just spend the entire time there. There's enough people that have the means to pay high-end prices for building performance, for comfort. It's not even the electrical aspect of it, just for the pure comfort of building performance.
There was part of me that actually thought going to Greensboro would be good, but I wouldn't do that for $200.
Oh, certainly not. Are you charging flat rate?
That was my idea initially.
I would charge, figure out what it would cost you in time and charge a flat rate to drive there and drive back. Because the worst part about a flat rate, on a lot of people's opinion, is that once you've driven somewhere, you have to drive back for free.
And I don't think, especially for a specialty, you don't fall into that stipulation.
You need to cover your expenses and your bases going both directions. Does your wife have any experience, like business side? Has she been to school for it or anything, or she works somewhere?
She's a secretary for a law firm.
Okay.
But no, she's just as inexperienced at this game as I am.
Have either of y'all read many books, like business management books or anything?
I'm not much of a reader. I used to read like a fiend, but HVAC took over. Oh, yeah. I only read installation instructions. Once you find your passion, there's tunnel vision, I guess, that puts you focusing on that. And one of our biggest arguments between me and the wife is that I spend so much time talking and thinking and dreaming about heating and air conditioning and home performance.
The next thing you know, there's going to be a Raritan HVAC system, like a Carrier and a Trane. So there's going to be a Raritan. Then she'll thank you for all the time and effort you spent doing
that. Yeah.
Hopefully it's while you're still on Earth. So I don't read very much either. I don't know if you're familiar with the Parkinson's theory. A void will fill any space and time. So if you have 2 hours, you're going to fill that 2 hours up with something. And my 2 hours probably isn't going to get filled up with reading a book. Now, listening to a book, I'll do that. My office is in Savannah and I live in Metter. So it's an hour to an hour and a half drive to the office and then an hour, hour and a half drive back home. That's 2 to 3 hours a day that I could listen to a book or podcast. So I'll pick out a book and download it from Amazon and take a listen, or from the iTunes, iCloud.
Yeah. When I was working for the commercial service company that I worked for a short period, that was one of my favorite things about it, was the windshield time. It gave me the opportunity to get into the podcast, because when I'm home, there's other things that I end up taking that time up with.
Absolutely.
And when I'm alone in a truck, all I have is the stereo and the road ahead of me. I burned up some podcasts and stuff, YouTube videos. I have a mount in my car where my phone sits. It's like a heads-up display where I'm not actually watching the video, but that audio background is, I'm trying to learn things. And this podcast that you're working on, I have eaten up the first few episodes in trying to better my understanding of business so that I can hit the ground running. And one thing from your, I think it was the introductory episode, where I actually had a little bit of a
aha moment.
It was more of a, oh crap, what am I doing?
I prefer the aha moments, but yeah, I assume those are going to come as well.
Definitely. But the thing where you were talking about having left the company you were working with and starting on your own, and you said, I would rather starve than take a customer. The way that impacted me was like, crap, suddenly I don't have hundreds of customers to reach out to. Right. Because in one way of thinking, I would be stealing someone else's customer. But then I had a conversation with the wife last night with that quote specifically in mind, and she said, well, the customers aren't loyal to anyone.
Yeah, it's a really touchy subject. I have a really good friend here in town. We talk, I would say, probably every day. He's probably my best friend, and he owns another air conditioning company in town. He was in a similar predicament. He left the company but he left it on a really short notice with really no plans of going into business for himself. If you'd asked me the day before I quit if I would ever own my own business, and I'd swear that I'd never do my own thing. And then the following day, he's quits and starts his own business. He had some customers who reached out to him, and he just adamantly refused to go do them until it had been a year. So basically, he broke away from the company, and then a year later, if somebody reached out to him, he would talk with them. But another person that I know, he left a company and immediately started taking the customers. Like, he just went right down the Rolodex, and half the customers left and went with him. And yeah, you can present the argument, well, the customers, they know what's up. They know how that relationship is. So they know that person X left person Y's company, and they're still following them. So they're just as guilty in that situation as the others. But there's a lot of times that as a salesperson, like if you're doing outside sales or if you're doing the marketing of a company, the people know you as a face and a figure, but they don't know the company. So that doesn't make it okay that they have a relationship with you and you leave the company and you take the customers. That's kind of the way that I feel about it. I feel that you were paid to be that face of the company. And so while you were there drumming up the work and getting the customer base, you were being paid to do that. So technically, whoever paid you has the rights to that customer base. And if you can do it while you're getting paid, you can do it while you're doing it for yourself. Just go after a different customer base. And a lot of times I feel like a customer would feel more loyal to you after the fact if you told them, look, no, I can't do it right now because you're a customer at this X, Y, and Z company. Now, if they immediately left that company, not fired that company from service provider and went to another company, and then 6 months later came to you, all bets are off in my opinion on that. So if they were only at that company for you, but you still told them no, and they still left the company to go somewhere else, but then they were not happy with the next following company, and then they reached out to you again, then I would be okay with that scenario. The biggest thing is you have to be able to sleep at night. And if the other employer comes back to you legally, you have an avenue of saying, look, I didn't use that. I didn't go after your customer base. And when they called me, I told them to stay with you. If they didn't, then I recommended another company. And they went with the other company. They weren't happy with the service they were providing either. So they reached out to me again. And at that point, we created our relationship was rebloomed.
Yeah, it's definitely sort of a gray area in one idea. And then in the other time, it's black and white, where you were introduced to that customer on someone else's dime. Now, there were a lot of customers that came to work for company or came to hire the company that I worked for because of my public visibility.
Oh, yes. You're in a special area because you have so many followers on YouTube and you have such a presence on social media that you bring that with you to the table wherever you go to work. That's a tough conversation to have. Did you ever sign a non-compete to the last place you were working?
There was a form that said something about taking technicians or doing side work for customers, but I'd have to find the form to see what the specific meaning of the words and words specifically were.
Before you did anything, before you actually went after any customers, I would definitely look at that form and have your wife, where she works, have them take a look at it if they do that type of stuff. And just cover yourself on that scenario, because your situation is a lot different than other people's, because people basically came to you, not the company, at the previous company you were working at. And in some states, a non-compete doesn't even hold up. In Georgia, I'm almost positive that it's 50 miles away. And see, that's a gray area also, because is it 50 miles away from the shop, or is it 50 miles away from the end of the service area? Because the service area might be 60 square miles away from the shop. So then 50 miles away from that, you're at 110 miles away from the office. That's a real gray area there. It's something that if it's able to be avoided, that's what I would recommend, if you can avoid it at all costs. But if not, I would definitely have a lawyer look into it just to make sure you're covered if it ever got to a legal battle issue.
that could be the worst case scenario, that someone gets their feelings hurt and decides to pursue legal money wasting to try and make things painful.
Exactly. And if they have kind of deep pockets or deeper pockets than you do, then they can draw it out. Even if they drew it out 6, 8, 10 months, it may result in something where you have to sell things that you need to work to pay for legal bills, and then that's going to hinder your customers and ultimately hinder your business.
Oh, definitely.
If that's the type of person that is at the company, why that decided to act that way?
I had a list of 400 some odd names and numbers that I painstakingly transferred to the House Call Pro system.
And that's from?
From my past iManifold reports was really where it came from.
If I was you, I would take that list and just chunk it. The only reason I say that is it's a clear conscience to you. So if you start building the customer base back up, it's with a clear conscience. These are people that reached out to me, or people that I've actually had to go out and network, market. I had to give them my business card, and they gave me their business card, and that's how I got their information.
So the customer list will stay in the system, because if I make contact with them, then it gives me their info. But basically, after listening to your message, I decided that those 400 some odd people were not going to get direct marketing.
I hope that that doesn't cause any kind of problems, because then I'd really feel bad.
I think you should feel bad universally if that mindset causes problems, just because that's where the contacts are. But then there's the fact that in that 400 people, there were at least half a dozen or more that came to the company where I was working because of me, and trying to go back and decide when and how that relationship started is nearly impossible. Unless there was a friendship or whatever, then it's different.
There's some companies that will follow a technician from company to company. Like, there's some businesses that are just like, hey, I'm going to follow Steven over here to this company. And they'll call the company and say, hey, I want Steven to come out here. And they'll say, well, Steven doesn't work with us anymore. Okay, well, where does Steven work? Well, I'm not going to tell you where he works. And then next thing you know, they're like researching you. They're searching you on Facebook and YouTube, and they finally figure it out. And somebody that's being that much of a detective to figure out where you went, like, you got to give them props.
There have been a couple of customers that have contacted me out of the blue and said, I called such and such company and you didn't work there anymore. What are you doing now? And I said, well, I'm working for myself. And they're like, when can I get on the schedule? And in that regard, my conscience is clear for the fact that I didn't pursue them. They found me. I was working through, which podcast was it? I skipped the dispatching podcast for now and moved to the next one. I think it was Property Managers.
Oh yeah, that was that little short one that Brian and I were just chit-chatting. And then we're like, well, you know what? We need to record this here podcast.
So Property Managers, it sounded like an interesting concept.
Have you ever done property management before?
When I worked for the other companies, there were several property management companies that fed them work with the do not exceed and contacting the management company, and then they have to contact the owner. And it's definitely something that is intriguing to me, but I feel like property management is more for the heating and air conditioning, plumbing, electrical, whatever side, where home performance, generally speaking, at least definitely in my experience, which is limited, property managers are not worried about leakage in the house or duct tightness testing or thermal cameras.
That's where you would get into more of the high-end rentals. Your quote-unquote slumlords definitely don't care. There's probably a gaping hole in the ceiling that they know about. They're not going to be your target audience, I wouldn't imagine. If you were to do something like that, it's not going to be something where you're going to get 6 service calls a day, but you may get into a type of scenario where every time they have a customer that just calls and they're like, they send the AC company out there and the AC company's like, oh, no, this system's working perfect. And then they call you and say, hey, we've had 3 service companies go out there. We've had a insulation guy go out there and he swears it's got plenty of insulation in it. Can you go figure out what the problem is? Because we've had situations like that before, because we don't do duct blasting or blower door testing. And there's lots of times that I've gone in and I've said, man, I wish that I could do a blower door test. And if I could just test the performance of this house, I could go back to the homeowner and say, hey, look, these are the problems with the house. And at that point, you understand that the envelope is the issue and it's not the air conditioning unit that's the issue. These are your solutions to your problem. And if you want to take care of it, do X, Y, and Z. But if you don't want to do X, Y, and Z, then you're going to continue to have the problems. So at that point, there's no more guessing involved in the situation. You know the solution and you can get it taken care of. And we have had several customers, property managers, who would be on board for that kind of thing. It's not something that you would get service calls every day about, but if they know that you're an expert in that field and you stay top of mind with them, because a lot of times you'll go into a property manager's office and drop a card, and then next thing you know, they're like, I know there's somebody that does that, but for the life of me, I cannot remember who it was. But as long as you can stay top of mind with the property managers, then as soon as a situation like that arises, they're like, okay, they'll reach out to their homeowner. We have a guy, he'll go in and test the whole house and he'll come back with all of the problems that it could be. That could work out really well for you, I feel like.
And I think that's in part where I had an idea of excelling, listening to Corbett Lunsford in his plethora of detailed information.
Oh, yeah.
He's talking about how the typical HVAC contractor focuses on the equipment, doesn't look at the customer, doesn't listen to the customer, and then says, well, the air conditioner's not big enough. We need a bigger air conditioner. And then they don't look at the ducting. And so they put a bigger unit in with the same ducting, and then they can't figure out why it's not working efficiently. And that's where I want to aim. I want to aim at fixing the problems that other contractors aren't willing to fix, because I have that detailed mindset. And at this point, I've got the equipment to also look at the details.
And see, the one thing that you kind of have over Corbin is the fact that you have air conditioning experience also. It helps him because he can think outside of the air conditioning scope of things, which makes total sense. Being able to go out to these properties and test the envelope of the house, you can also measure the refrigerant. You can do all the diagnostic on the air conditioning too. So if one of those other air conditioning companies had missed something, you can go through there and inspect the operation of the system also using your iManifolds. You use iConnect, that type of stuff. And then you can do a printout really quick for the property manager and the homeowner. And you have a leg up on a lot of those other guys. So you're basically an HVAC company on steroids.
Just need to develop the customer relationships on steroids so that I can stay in that realm.
It'll come, that's for sure. You're far, far more advanced than I was when I started out on my own. So I feel like it won't take you very long at all to really blow up. You've decided on a niche in industry, which is really cool. I just went after the low-hanging fruit. So you're kind of reaching for the high-hanging fruit right off the rip, which I commend. That's a pretty cool deal.
One thing that influenced me to continue to strive for excellence and pursue the home performance niche was actually advice from Jim Bergman, saying that if you need to run 10 service calls a day to make money, then you're not maximizing your potential for each call.
That is so true. I haven't heard him say that, but I could definitely hear him say it in his voice.
Yeah, he said, if you charge for what you're doing, then you only need half as many calls to make the same or more money, because you're doing the work like it should be done. You're providing premium service, and so you're going to demand or require a higher fee to do the work as it should have been done the first time. I mean, if you go behind a contractor and they put in a massively oversized system, the only answer to that residential situation is to change the equipment to the right size.
The only time that I would see an issue with that thought process, which that's the thought process that I have also, is when you are dealing with property management companies and it's a tenant situation and it's not going to be your high-end tenants, it's a little bit more difficult to convince them to allow you to stay on site for 2 or 3 hours to go through the entire system. Some property managers just simply want the immediate problem solved and they want you to go. And that is the nice thing about having flat rate, is they're not being charged for you to diagnose the entire system. But at the same time, it's a bad part about flat rate because they're not paying you to sit there and diagnose the entire system if they don't want to. So I go through the entire system and then present all the issues, and then you'll figure out which property managers just aren't going to approve any of the extra stuff. And I wouldn't say quit offering those property managers the additional repairs, but just make note that you probably shouldn't spend quite as much time doing the diagnostic on those. I mean, you still want to diagnose the entire system. That's something that I had to really emphasize to my guys over the past year, 2 years, is to get away from diagnosing just the problem. Even though that's what the property manager says, diagnose the entire system and make notes of the entire system, because then later on, if they come back and say, well, you should have told us about this problem that you had. And then, because they're the same property managers, they'll say, no, we just want the bare minimum done and we want you to get in and get out. But then as soon as 30 days later, a fan motor quits and you were on the outdoor unit and you were working on the indoor unit, then they're not going to want to pay a diagnostic for you to go back out there, even though it's unrelated.
Always better to CYA.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to get off on a little tangent there with that, but I wanted to ask you about your YouTube, because that's how a lot of people found you, and you have a few Facebook groups. You just have the HVACR with Stephen R. Reardon Facebook group. Is that right? Or do you have more?
I've got the group and the business page.
It's a funny thing about Facebook with their pages. They don't let you any visitors post anything to your pages. They just want you to post to your group instead.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about the group that I wish they would integrate the page analytics and sort of make a group the same as a page, because it seems like there's a lot of large groups out there that use their groups as a marketing opportunity. They approach manufacturers and product dealers and say, hey, I will advertise your product on this group. It's got such and such following. And the group does not have any analytics that are of any real value compared to what the page does. The page shows views and everything else, where the group just shows a bunch of comments, but it doesn't really show you how far that post reached.
And it's weird because your groups are the ones with more interaction, so you would think that tracking that would make more sense. So with your YouTube channel, your first post that's on there right now is about 10 years ago. What made you decide to go YouTube, and why did you start filming you working? Because your first ones aren't necessarily about air conditioning. What made you decide to start filming the air conditioning side of things?
When the iManifold was initially teased, you can go back and find my video called Thoughts on iManifold. That was really the start of the disaster.
The time-consuming monster.
Yeah. What it was that when I first started my channel, I was influenced by a young man named Philip DeFranco, who is now independently wealthy because of YouTube starts. And in 2006, I created my channel and wanted to one day become an influencer on Philip DeFranco's level. And I posted a few things, and I didn't understand the necessity for repetitive posts. I kind of thought that you put something up and eventually it got enough attention that your channel became a thing. But when iManifold was first announced, there was a lot of negative feedback on the YouTube platform in regard to the different aspects of iManifold. And I felt like the product needed a positive thought added to the mess. And so when I posted that video, I got some interaction and communication with other YouTubers. And I realized that there was a market, because in 2006, HVAC on YouTube was boring. It was webinars and really poorly produced videos. I think Dr. Z might have been around back in 2006-07.
Was Ralph back then?
I'm not positive. He definitely wasn't on my radar at that point. But when I noticed that Ralph and Eddie Leverich and Fritz Rochester, when I saw that they had thousands of subscribers and that they were making good videos, I realized that there was a niche for it, and I decided that I might have something to offer that would allow people to learn some things and be entertained, if nothing else, or just laugh at me.
It looks like Ralph joined in 2011. You were a few years ahead of Ralph of actually joining YouTube. I think his oldest video looks like it's about 5 years old, the oldest one that's posted right now. Wow, he's got 8.5 million views. It's crazy how many times people will watch the videos.
Well, there is a little bit of a explanation on massive portion of those 8.5 million, in that he did a video that definitely went viral by HVAC standards, where he shot his son's iPhone. And that video in and of itself probably has 1.5 million views or more.
I forgot about that.
That helped get him more visible.
That makes sense. Well, I'm going to go get my son's iPhone.
Right, exactly. I was trying to come up with that thing to do that would also get that kind of visibility. But from there, it just was a matter of, I obviously have something to share sometimes. There are people that are interested in my perspective over the perspective of other creators, possibly, or in addition to.
What reason would you think that would be?
I think a lot of it comes down to different styles and different mannerisms, as well as the way that the creators interact with their audience.
I could see that.
There are some creators out there that are very abrasive, and they garner a certain level of attention from people for that abrasive nature. And then there's got to be the other side of the spectrum where there's a level-headed educational response. And I think that's where Brian and his HVAC school venture really excels, in offering that clean, level-headed perspective and training avenue.
And it's not boring. That's the biggest thing. Because a lot of times, like, I will have the best intentions of watching or listening to something that I know is going to be packed full of information, but I'm struggling the entire time because it's just so boring. And it's tons of information, just really dry, and can't really take anything away from it because of how boring it is. But Brian and those guys have done a really good job avoiding that scenario.
One thing that I saw, and I think I'm losing my mind or train of thought, but when it came to the videos, the way they were produced, was that there was an opportunity. Let me back up just a little. A lot of the videos were talk about what you're going to do, shut the camera off, do it.
Oh, and then just pop back up.
And then talk about what you just did. And that type of video is less interesting to me, and apparently to a lot of people, than the point of view during the work process.
Yeah, I was watching your one where the customer had you go back out and move the train condensing unit. They moved the satellite and everything. And whenever you were doing it, I was thinking to myself, man, it would be really cool if you could set up, not in that exact video, but like whenever my guys are doing an install, if I could set up a tripod and just have it sitting there basically filming the whole thing, and then just do a time lapse. So obviously you're not going to sit there for 6 or 8 hours and watch a video of two guys setting a condenser, but if you could do it in like 30 seconds or a minute and a half of them setting it and pulling a vacuum, and then like using Jim Burtman's and Bill Spohn's, their recovery method or evacuation method, and using those big old monstrous hoses and watching the guys actually set it up and do it and everything. And
with something like that, you can take the entire process and create one video, and then you can take sections of it and create additional detailed videos where you don't have to sit through a 30-minute video. You can get a 5 or 10-minute chunk.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Do you watch your analytics on YouTube?
I watch them, unfortunately, more often than I should.
Do you find any advantage to posting like on the same day every week or every month? Do you find like that consistency as a benefit?
It definitely can be a benefit up until this point where I happen to have more free time, where I'm not terribly busy at this moment. It's difficult to have a schedule. And I commend Brian for the fact that he is constantly throwing out tech tips, because that much detail is extremely difficult for me to have like a daily thing.
And for anybody that doesn't know what Steven's talking about, Brian, all you have to do is click a button, subscribe to his daily tech tips, and he sends a short excerpt every evening. I receive one, and it's not crazy, but it's just enough of the information about different things, and he sends it out every day. So you definitely need to sign up for it. Even if you're not a tech, even if you're an owner or a manager, it's great, because I've picked up things I probably won't ever use in the field, but at least I can pass it along to my guys.
It's valuable. And one thing that I'd like to see is another thing that Corbett, I guess I'm tooting his horn today. Another thing he says is that the customer needs to be educated. You want to have good technicians, but a customer can't find a good technician if they don't have any idea what to look for. You need the customer to know what superheat and subcool and microns and CFMs are, because if they don't know what those are and they don't know that they're important, they'll never be able to ask for that and be willing to pay for the quality work that you know needs to happen. So that's important, to educate the customer just as much as you educate the working technician.
Do you feel like you'll talk, I mean, obviously you'll talk over some customers' heads, but do you feel like that's a negative aspect of that conversation?
I am trying to train myself to catch on to those customers.
As soon as their eyes glass over.
Right. A lot of times the customers have said that they don't understand, but they know that I know what I'm talking about. And so they garner trust in me in that regard. I find it very difficult not to talk over their head and stop when I notice that they're falling asleep. But they, by and large, the feedback that I've got on my method has been positive for delivering detailed information, despite whether or not they actually follow and understand.
I agree with that. Some people are hard to read. Some people never checked into the conversation, so they can't check out. So that's probably the most difficult one for me to try to fill them out.
Yeah.
That's all I have on the YouTube. I just really was wondering about if you noticed if it had any benefit to being pretty consistent, or the taglines or anything like that. Or do you just kind of throw it up there and wing it and see what happens?
In many aspects, I do just throw it up there. I try to set the keywords as a default, and I try to do some video naming with purpose, but it's difficult to take some calls and find a good name for them that is actually descriptive without being a bunch of keywords as the title.
Or being clickbait.
Right. Those people that have no conscience, apparently, and just throw clickbait on everything.
That's horrible.
Drives me crazy, but it has a value in that it does get attention.
That's really cool. Oh, one more thing. How much time do you spend editing your videos?
At this point, I'm trying to maintain a twice a week video post, sort of a Monday midnight, Friday 12 a.m. or something like that. Because in the consistency of posting, it's more valuable in that you continue to get eyes on your content than it is whether or not you're posting something of massive value.
So that brand recognition.
Yeah. If you're posting something weekly, then you're going to end up in people's subscription feed consistently and have a better chance of getting views. And if you randomly post, then nobody knows when you might put another one up. And so they don't come back to the platform to look or check for your sub.
And that's the same thing with us doing podcasting. With us releasing every Monday, it's a lot easier for people to come and expect it. Like Mike Rowe, he releases every Tuesday. So you just know that on Tuesday morning to listen to the Mike Rowe podcast.
The difficulty on following a schedule is that to some degree you want to maintain pertinence of the content. So if you're doing a video on September 11th, and you want to throw a shout out in remembrance of the men and women that sacrificed their lives to save other lives, you don't want that to show up September 30th. So there's a difficulty in maintaining relevance of the subject matter. But if I shot a video yesterday, it was an hour and 15 minutes of footage. So it takes me at least an hour and 15 minutes to come up with a rough cut. It takes a lot more than an hour and 15 minutes to actually trim it to the most pertinent information or the most interesting information. To be able to shoot it the day and post it that day, you almost need a team of editors to take that content and work until midnight so that it can post that night or something. So it's difficult, and that's why I've tried to maintain some schedule so that if I shoot a video today and I'm able to edit it in the next couple of days, it'll post within the week that I shot it, hopefully. Right now, my latest schedule, or the longest scheduled video, is set for October 17th, but it was shot on October 4th. So there's a loss of relevance to some degree.
Especially if you had like a cold front come through and you're wearing like shorts and a short sleeve shirt and it's snowing where you're at now.
A lot of people really don't follow the date and time or that the video was posted. They'll watch a video from winter in the summer and they'll be like, why is there ice out there? Where are you? I've got those comments. But to be able to edit and shoot and post, it takes time. And so you have to sacrifice that relevance to a degree and go with what it is, because it'll stay on YouTube land forever. And it may not be relevant immediately, but it may be valuable information for somebody to find next year.
I've binge watched several channels that just go through there and say, oh, I'm just going to sit here and spend all weekend watching all these videos.
I really enjoyed the Day in the Life series that I initially did when I was working for one of the other companies. It was a lot of fun to try to catch. I literally swapped batteries and threw batteries on the charger every 2 hours trying to maintain recording.
I couldn't imagine having to edit that.
I had one video that was a four-part video on installing a furnace. I had hours and hours.
Oh, I bet.
There's part of me that wants to go back to some of my old content and recut them since I've learned a few things. But to go back and find that video footage and recut it without losing its heart is difficult to maintain.
All right. So as we wrap it up, as people try and reach out to you because of all the value you've presented to us and brought to us this bright and early morning, as you listen to the ambiance of birds and just nature's calling in the background, where could people reach out and find you, Stephen?
Honestly, the easiest place is probably Facebook, since it's got the built-in messaging and seems like the world is on Facebook. My group is HVACR with Stephen Reardon. You can probably search just my name, Stephen Reardon, and get connected to it. If you search my name on Google, you'll find my YouTube channel.
And that's Stephen with a PH.
Yes, Stephen Rardon. That really is the easiest way. Google me and hit me up on Facebook. I'd be happy to answer any questions or anything else that you have.
Awesome. We appreciate you coming on the podcast and taking some time out of your busy day. I know as a new business owner, there's lots of things that you could be doing other than sitting here jack-jawing with us. We appreciate that. We appreciate all your information.
It's definitely my pleasure. I'm honored to be given the moment to run my mouth.
We look forward to speaking with you in the future and watching all your videos.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Have a good day.
You too.